Find all back episodes and other information at mattsaudioblog.com.
No, they're all bad, huh? Okay. I thought I'd try. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Before the Dragon Podcast, as Heath is laughing at a terrible list that I just gave him. I'm Matt Murdock. I am joined by, really, Heath Snow is how the rest of the podcasting in Game of Thrones world knows him. It's not that he knows nothing. It's that he knows so much, he just can't get it all out. That's
Is that what it is?
That's exactly what it is, Heath. It's been we talked about this before we started, and it's been probably possibly since season five of Game of Thrones, since the last time you and I talked anything about the Game of Thrones universe. So I'm delighted to have you, but I'm also delighted by the fact that you have a movie coming out. And it's a movie that you created. It's your labor of love. It's coming out on Apple TV, on Amazon, and it's called Star City Murders. And I want everybody to get onto the internet. I know it's a dangerous place these days, but if you're listening to me, you probably have already been on the internet at some point recently. I need you to go to Apple TV. I need you to go to Amazon. I need you to get the movie Star City Murders. Now, if you're before April 16th, you're getting this podcast, then pre-order it. Just do it. I mean, if you need to get this into your eyeballs. You need to get it into your ears. You need to get this movie into your veins. Star City Murders. Please pre-order, or if it's after the 16th, go ahead and just buy the sucker. I mean, it's going to be good. I know, because I watched the man make it. Well, from a distance, I watched him make it, but I was always kept in the loop because I was one of his funders, and a very small funder. But I really enjoyed the process, and being part of the process, I got to contribute a little bit with the music, or at least where we thought the music was going to go. I acted as kind of a music consultant. I thought that your composer, Chris, that was his name?
Yes, Chris McNanny. Because I wanted you to score the film, but you're like, I'm too busy. So I was like, okay, Matt Murdock. But I understood. But you were such an integral part at helping us get to the point where when we hired Chris, you kind of gave your two thumbs up. But you were so great at, because this was the first feature Chris had scored. And you did the, what is the sheet called that I can never?
Oh, yeah, the SMPTE time code, yeah.
Oh, you were amazing at, because you couldn't score the film, you were like, I will consult and I'll help you in any way I can. And you really bridged, I mean, to bring Chris on and then just your knowledge and everything. And I'm so honored because, you know, it comes full circle because I knew nothing really about scoring and stuff until you started podcasting about Lost and started podcasting about the score. And you would do podcasts that would detail what Giacchino was doing. And I was just like, now I can't watch anything ever again the same because of you. But, you know, that's why I reached out to you immediately, because your knowledge and everything. So thank you so much. Yes, you're a backer as well. But, man, you really helped in the process of getting the score together for this film.
Well, I really appreciate that. I just really all I wanted to get at was the fact that I just thought Chris did a really excellent job. And you know what a snob I am when it comes to music scores. And
well, you should be. You should be a snob because that's your field.
it's my field, or it's something that I fooled everybody into believing was my field one way or the other. And, I've always loved analyzing scores and everything, and I thought that Chris did an absolutely excellent job. I've been one of the few fortunate people who've seen at least a relatively close to final cut of everything.
Right.
I'm not sure. And I just really love this movie. So once again, Star City Murders, Apple TV, Apple TV Plus, I guess. And you can also get it at Amazon. And where is it going to be premiering at on other places?
So we're on like something like 17 platforms this Tuesday, April 16th. But you can also, so Amazon and Apple TV are the prime players. It's going to be available for purchase or rent on all cable outlets, on Dish Network, on Rogers in Canada. So it's really a North American premiere. But through Amazon and Walmart, you can actually buy the DVD or Blu-ray. Nice. We got a DVD and Blu-ray release, which I was like, physical media. I love physical media. I was actually kind of shocked, Matt, that we got a DVD Blu-ray release, because nowadays everything is streaming and, you know, that it's digital. But I guess the analytics told them to do a Blu-ray release. So we have one. So it's on Amazon, Walmart, Barnes & Noble. Those are only three places I know you can get it right now. But it's just, it's honestly, it's just really exciting because we started preparation during the pandemic, 2020. Yeah. And I mean, it's been a long road, but it's here and people actually will be able to watch the film next Tuesday. And just very excited because we put a lot of hard work into it with no money. And it looks like a legit film. Like, I know that's weird to say, but it's like, I think people will be pleasantly surprised. Like, with the amount of money we had, even people close to me were like, we couldn't have done this with a fifth, you know, with your budget at all. There's no way.
Right.
I mean, and I'm like, well, you know, I called in a lot of favors and we had a lot of people who just really worked their ass off doing multiple jobs. So we're very proud of this film. So yeah, if you can go out there, pre-order it or order it on Tuesday or anytime after that. And no, we're real excited. And I'm very excited for people to actually watch it. If you like true crime, serial killers, and good characters and good dialogue, this is the movie for you.
Right on. And folks, I'm just going to say this. If you do not pre-order or order this movie, I will absolutely find you on the internet. I will find you. If you're on Instagram, you're on Facebook, you're on Twitter, you're on Blue Sky, you're on Threads, I'll find you. And I'll call you mean names, like non-purchaser of Star City Merger.
And we'll stick Holly Hot Pants on you, too.
Yeah, I mean,
we have an arsenal. Bubba, Catfish, the crew will come after you.
I mean, we'll all shout names at you like non-Star City purchaser. And we'll do it in all caps and we'll do it with exclamation points so that you know that Donald Trump sent you.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
The reason why we're here, actually, is because we want to talk about House of the Dragon. Me and Heath, like I said, we haven't talked about the Game of Thrones universe in years. And I'm wondering, Heath, if you saw both of the trailers and as the marketing made you choose a side, have you chosen a side?
Okay. I've been struggling with this. Yes, I've seen both trailers. I actually rewatched the finale in preparation for this pod just because it's been a while. And I'm like, what? You know, when you were like, hey, let's talk House of the Dragon, the new trailers, I'm like, that's great. And I'm like, I better freaking get caught up with what's going on. So I watched the finale last night and I, you know, you had asked me, are you excited about House of the Dragon? And to be honest, there's so much TV out there that I wasn't like, you know, when we did Lost and even Game of Thrones proper, it, in the off season, it was like, I need it to come back. House of Dragon, I loved their first season. I thought it was fantastic. But I've done other things. I've watched other things, so many other things. But then when you said, hey, let's do a pod, I watched the trailers again and I'm like, and I, when I watched the finale, I'm like, oh my God, I do miss this show. I'm like, holy. I'm like, I had forgotten how much I loved this show. So, I mean, I guess I'm with Matt Smith and the crew.
Okay. But your Team Rhaenyra. I love
Team Rhaenyra, but I love Olivia Cooke Allison. I love her to death. So it's like if I could switch her over, I'd be totally on that side. I don't like anyone else on her team. But so I think I'm pro both females, and I wish they could come together and conquer and rule. So, but I am upset with what, okay. And I apologize for names. Prince Aemond. Yep. Is that how you pronounce it? Patchy for the, what he did to Tom Cruise, youngling number two in the finale. I forgot about that. And I'm like, oh man, you know, I know he looked like he had remorse. That's not what his intention was, but the dragon just, so
he didn't have to go after him in the first place. That's
well, there you go. That. There you go. He did not. And so that's what sways me to team Rhaenyra. Is that
yep. That, you got it.
Okay. Hey, team Rhaenyra. But you know, I do love Alicent a little bit. I do, you know, so, but I don't like anyone else on that team. So it's tough.
Absolutely. And I understand that. I think part of the whole deal is I've heard some fans complain that, oh, they're slanting one side over the other, but the humanity of it all with people just making mistakes. Right. Alicent doesn't believe that Aegon, her son, should be king. If Viserys correct. Doesn't mistake that he's talking to her, or if he thinks that he's realizes that he's talking to her and not to Rhaenyra, of course, the guy's near death, so I'm going to kind of give him a break on that. But if he doesn't say, you know, Aegon, prince that was promised, all of this stuff to Alicent when, you know, it's the last conversation they ever have, then I don't think Alicent goes along with this whole thing about her son being king. In fact, she even resisted it a little bit at the beginning with the Green sure. Council episode.
Yeah.
But just the fact that, and again, Aemond with Vhagar, you can still trace it back that he never should have gone after Lucerys anyway. But once Lucerys's dragon ended up making that mistake of shooting fire at Vhagar, there was not going to be any controlling Vhagar anyway. Aemond, as big as a guy as he is at that age, I mean, he's a little dot on the back of that dragon. He ain't going to be controlling that thing. But if you've seen these two trailers, what about these two trailers on either side, which scenes or little shots in those trailers really got your blood pumping for House of the Dragon to return in June? And like you said, it's kind of hard to get your blood pumping for anything right now because there's so much out there. And it's just kind of like, you almost kind of got to just prioritize and watch what you want to watch. But was there anything out there that would make you prioritize House of the Dragon on June 16th over?
Yes. In the Black trailer, we see the Night's Watch in the wall. We see a shot of it. And I got chills. I mean, some people will say they're multiplying, a little Grease reference. But when I saw that, I'm like, oh, okay. How much is going to be there storyline wise,
right?
And I just was just like, oh, interesting, because I know at the end of season one, when trying to get the Starks and the Baratheons and the Arryns to her side, Rhaenyra, so I'm like, and then with, of course, what happened at the end of season one with it not going very well when her son came. But I'm wondering what's going to go on at the wall. And, you know, I just saw a little snow and saw the, and I'm like, oh my God, I just was like, that's my wheelhouse. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe they're going there. So I hope it's a continuous storyline and not just, you know, maybe one scene and then that's it. So that really got me pumped.
Excellent. Well, there's something that's very interesting about the way they set up the first season that kind of made this inevitable. And that is when Viserys tells Rhaenyra about the dream that Aegon the Conqueror had about needing to reunite Westeros against a great threat. And that was the reason that he conquered. So now maybe we'll get to see somebody, hopefully, get to understand the real reason why they need to unite, is my hope. That not only will we go to the wall, but that we might actually go beyond the wall and experience some things like that. Now, that is not in the books. That's just a TV hope of mine.
Oh, okay.
So, because there's very little actually other than, well, there's a couple of passages in Fire and Blood that talk about, we did see a shot of Jace, that would be Tom Cruise, number one son.
Maverick, we can call him.
Maverick. Okay. So Jacaerys Maverick is in the books. He does go up to visit Winterfell. And we even heard at the end of the first season about she was going to send him both to, I think, the Vale, to the, you know, where the Arryns are at. Good old Robin Arryn. And well, not at this time. He's not there. Thank
you. No, but we can think about him.
Yeah, but he's going to the Arryns and he's going to go to the Starks and he's going to ask for their alliances. So hopefully this will all work out and we'll get to see much more of the North than we might have anticipated, is my thing. I don't know how long it'll last, but I feel like as long as you keep saying there needs to be a threat, this was something that the showrunners introduced into the show that wasn't in those in the passages of Fire and Blood either. But it does tie the whole universe together. We've seen what the end game of all of that is. So it'll now be fun to see kind of the birthing of that, hopefully.
Right.
Yeah. What else about the trailer struck you? Anything?
You know, when I was watching the green trailer and Aegon, I'm like, is he the new Joffrey? And then, of course, I thought of Bubba and Catfish. And I'm like, just the little clips they showed, I'm like, ah. He does seem like Joffrey-like. So I knew Bub and Catfish would be, you know.
Excited.
To say the least. I picture Bub and Catfish in one of those little pools, you know, you put in the front yard, kids, and they're splashing each other in excitement, or a slip and slide. I just see them very excited about this. So. Because I think Bubba declared for the green side. I think he did a while ago.
Did he?
I think so. I think he's team green. Yeah.
Wow. So I'm so disappointed in him. Anyway.
Well, you know, that's Bubba.
I think that there was one particular shot where Aegon looks particularly mean. And I actually can't remember, because they interspersed characters from either side in both of those trailers, right?
Right. Yeah.
But there's one shot of Aegon just beating the living crap out of somebody with a club. And I thought, that's kind of vicious. I'm not sure if I trust that anymore.
Right.
I suppose it will depend on the context of it. But
sure.
It also is alarming that because I can't picture Rhaenyra beating somebody with a club. Not that she's not capable, just that she would find enough reserve to not do that, hopefully.
Well, I mean, towards the end of, well, actually to the end of season one, I mean, she didn't want to go to war.
Right.
I mean, she was very much keeping peace with the realm. But then once she found out her son was killed.
Yeah.
That look is the last shot of the season. Yeah. And it was like, oh boy. Cause she even says in the black trailer, I need to fight this war and win it. And then of course, Damon, Matt Smith's look is just like, I mean, I don't know if that, cause with trailers, you don't know if that's continuous, but his look is like,
Yeah, it was a perfect shot to throw in there, because that sums up Damon to a lot of degrees.
Yeah, because that's what he wanted. That's what he wanted all along.
Exactly.
So it was just like, oh God, I was like, damn, I missed this show. Like when I see stuff like that, I'm like, ah, you know, June can't come any quicker.
Okay. Is there any questions you want to put out to our listeners who can respond back to you or to me about those trailers? Is there anything that you said that what the heck could that be? Or is something that you want to theorize on about it? Any of that?
I don't know if I necessarily have any theories at this time. It just feels like they're gearing up for a war. It's just going to be interesting how it all gets to that point. It's tough because King Viserys, Paddy Considine was so good.
Yeah.
Was so good in season one. And I mean, down to his deathbed. And I still can't believe he wasn't nominated for an Emmy. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you have to do? I mean, seriously. That was one of the greatest performances. And for me, personally, as an actor, going through the season, I'm just like, he's doing the ultimate. I mean, it was amazing. And it just shocks me that how can you not be nominated for an Emmy? I don't get it. But
perhaps House of the Dragon submitted the wrong episodes.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe they submitted Cinderella Man is out to his supporting lead from Cinderella Man.
Or merely the eighth episode, and all they submitted was a scene with this 2-minute walk, and everybody at the Academy went, he's just walking.
I guess. I don't get it.
I didn't give him an Emmy for that, but you know, that's me.
Academy member. Well, since day episode one, I was like, oh my gosh, he's a shoo-in, you know. Yeah. And so that really bugs me, unless they just don't like him, whatever. I will say this. The one negative I have with House of the Dragon season one is the births, showing us the details. like even in the finale, I'm like, God, do I need to see this? I'm like, what in the Sam Howell is going on? Whatever reason they have for showing it, it's tough.
It's very disturbing, all of it.
It was very disturbing. That's a good way to put it. I'm just like, why? Hopefully we won't have any stillbirths in season two.
I'm not going to spoil anything for you. But I think we may be past that stage with all of them. I won't say anything else. I think we may be past that stage with all of them.
I hope you're right, because me and my wife, we both, I mean, it started with House of the Dragon, and then it went on. There was a few other shows we were watching, and they were showing births. And I'm like, what is going on? What are we doing? You know, anyway.
So as far as the trailers go, anything else additional you want to say, put out there before we move on to some other news?
Yeah, no, pretty much. I mean, you know, you don't want to show too much in a trailer for the new season, but they gave us enough where it just kind of got our blood pumping again. You know, nothing like, you guys see that in that little shot? Aside from the wall, for the most part, it's just the quality of this show, and just the epic television of what this is. I'm just excited to see what they do, and I'm glad they didn't give us everything, of course.
Right,
but you're not going to need to give much, because we're going to watch, and I'm excited. And you know, and it comes out in June, and it's, I remember watching the first season. Did that come out in the summer as well?
It came out I think the last week of August, and then ran into the fall.
Okay. Cause it was nice when that came out. Yeah, you're right. It was August. Oh, just something about summertime. And then you do, in the old days, you never got new shows. I mean, it was network TV.
Right.
May ended and you got reruns. And now with the whole streaming and everything else, we're getting new shows in the summer. And I love that. And it, again, the HBO Sunday night premiere of a new show, I dig it. And so I'm excited that this will pretty much dominate us to the Olympics. I mean, not that the Olympics are must-see TV anymore, but you know what I mean? It just like, it gives us that Sunday night in the summer. And I'm excited for that.
It's good. I think that's an excellent point, is that they found a really good window to put everything in.
Right.
You have the 4th of July holiday is happening at the beginning of a weekend. So people will be coming home from that to watch that episode on the 6th or the 7th. I think it's the 7th is when that episode will be on. And right. So I think, and like you said, it won't really go into too much competition with like the Olympics or anything else. It's just kind of like this perfect window that they found to put it in. I'm sure that was planned to some degree, as those things often are, as you probably know better than anybody.
Right. No, it is. It is.
So that's great. Now, if I told you that I had heard a rumor that there's going to be one additional trailer that comes out before House of the Dragon comes, do you think they've already done enough? Do you think another trailer would be too much? Or do you think or maybe disappointing because they're only going to rehash the stuff that we've already seen and maybe kind of mix it up in a different order? How would your reception to another trailer be? Or are you just somebody who says, yeah, the more the merrier?
Yeah, no, I think you got us with the black and green trailers now, and we're in April. So we got a couple months before the premiere. I think it's smart to premiere a new trailer as we get closer, but to give us a little something, because it's all about these two trailers kind of, House of Dragons coming back. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Looks good. And then as we're getting closer, you need that little oomph of like, oh yeah, it's really coming, and give me something new. So I'm cool with that. I like that strategy of, you know, not just giving us nothing until June. You know, you have to do that because there's so much out there right now and so many things that pull our attention in different directions that you still need to do good old trailers and get it, you know, and get us ready for it. So, no, I'm good with that. I'm good with the new trailer.
Right on. Now, if House of the Dragon Season 2, which I think is going to be very different, we're not going to have the time skips, I don't think. I think this is going to be
that's more that's linear. Right. Right. Because we did have a huge time skip. I mean, characters aged and I forgot about that.
Yeah, there were a couple of time skips in Season 1, and I don't think we'll have to deal with that in Season 2.
Right.
But as a book reader, I can tell you that there are some alarming things that are going to happen this season.
Oh, book reader, insider.
And so, I've been previewing some of them on the podcast. So I wouldn't listen to those if I were you, if you're trying to stay sure. But I think that this could be the make or break season for House of the Dragon because of this.
Oh, because there's what do you mean?
I think that people, depending on how faithful they are to the books, because you know there's always that crowd that demands that everything be word for word faithful to the adaptation. Fortunately, in Fire and Blood, there's not as nearly as many words as George usually puts in, so it'd be a little easier to do that. But that also makes the fandom crave it more, that particular part of the fandom. I don't care. I love the changes that they made in Season 1. I think I'm seeing some evidence of changes in Season 2 that I'm already enthusiastic about. So I don't have any problem with it, but I know that some people will. There will be. Of course. And I think the way that some of these events, some pretty big events, happen, we'll see whether it becomes more of the audience that hated Game of Thrones at the end or the audience that loved Game of Thrones the first four seasons. I think we'll see that kind of divide start to happen a little bit more.
You know, that's the one thing that bugs the hell out of me, Matt, is I know it's tough. If you're a devoted book reader and you have your ways and then you see it get adapted for a television show, and if it's not done in the way that whether you envisioned it or whether it was in the text, you know, people go crazy. It's two different medias. Yep. You have a book where you can just do whatever you want and explain about eggs and breakfast and Lady Stoneheart and all kinds of things. And then when it comes to TV, it's just a different animal. You have a short window, you have to capture your audience, and you have a set number of episodes, and you have to execute whatever storyline there is to get to the end, to the finale. And it doesn't necessarily always coincide with the material. And so it's tough because I get it. And if I was a devoted book reader, I'd feel the same way. But because I understand media and I know if you have a book and you have a movie or a TV show, it's just going to be different. It just is. Unfortunately, that's just the way of the world. And so I'm not saying book readers are wrong because they have every point they make, and they're allowed to be mad, sure, because it's understandable. But at the same time, when you're doing something visual on a TV media, there is going to be changes. It's just the way it is. And it sucks, but it's just the way it has to be because it's two different medias.
And I would imagine, Heath, that, you know, and you probably know this from all of your experience in television and what have you, not necessarily with your movie because you got to create it. You did your own studio.
Right.
It was
right.
Kind of your thing. But there's always studio notes coming in on stuff.
Oh, that's a whole nother. Yes. Because not only it's not just George R. R. Martin say, put this on the screen. There's these executives. Right. There's these people who are funding this, mm-hmm, who have their notes. And that's where the problem lies. It's not, you know, everyone wanted to bash Dan and Dave for, you know, of course, they didn't have any source material anymore. And they had to accelerate the last couple of seasons. Then you have the people funding you and HBO and the suit notes. And you're trying to compromise. I mean, when I was doing my film, luckily, my investors gave me carte blanche, right, and my direct to create. But you can tell, like, even after the movie's over and it's edited, they're like, well, why couldn't you do this and do this? I go, do you realize we didn't have enough money to do that? Right. Like you're trying to explain, because, you know, a lot of times people who aren't involved in the production, they just assume that things can change easily. But they don't realize it costs a couple hundred grand to do that. Right. You know, so unfortunately, you know, fans shouldn't have to worry about that, you know, but it's just the reality. So that's where you'll get some disconnect, where maybe the director of an episode or the showrunners want to do it one way, but then HBO comes in and says, no. You have to do this, this, and that, and you have to know where to pick your battles. And that's what's tough. And the fans get, I mean, right, when it comes down to it, if it's a bad choice and it's because of money or notes by the suits, the fans get screwed.
Right.
And then they were like, well, this is the show. You know, so that's where it's so hard, because, you know, like a Netflix, for the most part, from what I've heard, you know, a lot of times they'll give the creators, do your thing, here's the money. And they're able to create and not get so many notes or so many restrictions.
Right.
Where, you know, some, they may have their, you know, so that's where it's tough. And all I'm going to say is don't blame the showrunners for everything. You know, right. Dan and Dave got a bad rap. Don't blame them for everything, because there's a lot of stuff that was probably out of their control. It's so hard to do a show of this. I mean, House of Dragon, Game of Thrones, it's so epic. And oh my God, it's so hard because you have locations, you have actors, you have, I mean, there's so much involved in it and so much money that it's so tough. But, you know, I just say for the fans, enjoy it. Enjoy that the fact that we are getting this show.
Right.
And, you know, try to just, you know, if you have little problems, just let it go and just enjoy it for what it is. Because in the old days, 20, 30 years ago, you would never have gotten these shows. There just wasn't the technology and the money.
Or the interest. Now we're, I mean, the interest in fantasy
right.
was really weird for a while.
Yeah, no, it's evolved and it's changed. Now we got three body problem. I mean, it's all scientific. And I mean, you look at Apple TV and they got so many, Constellation, Invasion, all these shows that probably that wouldn't come in. Look at a Firefly. That was a show before its time, but right. Fox was just like, they canceled it.
Yeah.
And it's like, if that happened now, Netflix would have ordered 5 seasons of that show.
You're right.
You know, it's just unfortunately the way stuff has evolved that, you know, shows like, you know, Firefly today, that thing would get multiple season orders.
Yep.
But it was all about timing. So House of Dragon really, the first season was so good and it was done well, and Game of Thrones laid the groundwork to get a show like this. Because if it wasn't for Game of Thrones, we wouldn't have gotten House of the Dragon. There's no way, you know, there's no way. So, you know, at least TV is in such a better place now that HBO, FX, Hulu, Netflix, they're doing TV now. If it was just network and TNT and USA, we would not get this show.
You're absolutely correct there. He's Heath Snow is what I got to call him on this podcast.
Or Snolo.
Snolo.
So either one works.
Snolo. Heath Snolo. He has a Film List podcast on the DVR Podcast Network. Be sure to check that out. He's counting down his 1,000 favorite films. What number are you on now, Heath?
We are in like the 950s, I think. We're like 5 or 6 podcasts in. We do, because of the Star City Murders coming out, we have the Star City Murders companion podcast. So we're recording some new episodes of that. So the Film List is kind of on a mini hiatus, but okay. Me and Ando are cruising because I want to get it done before 4 years from now. You know, I want to get it. 1,000 films is a lot of work.
Wow, that's ambitious. That's very ambitious.
Yeah.
I like it. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you were there when I was doing like my top 200. I would call you up and be like, Matt, let's talk about 10 films. You're like, I'm available.
Yeah, I'm available. I don't know anything about any of them, but I'm there.
But you were awesome because there are so many that you came on and you just were like, let's talk about 10 films. And you were there. It was the time in our lives where we were both available and you would be like, let's do it. And we would talk about 10 films. So I even though I'm rebranding and redoing the Film List, you were there for the originals and it was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. Also, folks, what'll be a lot of fun is if you go on the internet, to Apple TV, to Amazon, to Walmart, everywhere you can go and buy Star City Murders. It's a movie that stars Heath. That was, did you work on a script?
So I originally was writing the script. It was going to be more of a comedy and I was writing it. And then once my director had to leave because he was busy winning an Emmy for editing, Nick Simotas. And he's like, but I got this guy for you, Giles Andrews. He'll direct your film. Giles. And then, you've met Giles. And as I was talking with Giles, as we were rewriting the script, it turned into, let's do it more serious, serial killer vibe, yada, yada. So I handed it over to him and he actually rewrote the script.
I know.
So he's actually, the story is, I'm still get credited by the story and the characters, but Giles is the one that took it over and made it what it is now. So as much of a writer as I am, I got to give him credit. And we got to the point where it was like, okay, you deserve sole writer credit, because if someone watches this film and is like, I want you to write a film for me, it was all you, brother. So I was like, I'm not messing around with trying to get credit for it. So,
all right. Well, again, if you're getting this podcast before April 16th of 2024, go and pre-order. And if it's after April 16th, it's there. Buy it. Watch it.
Yeah, rent or buy. Even rent it. I'm okay with a rental. You don't have to buy it, to rent it if you got cable.
Buy it. Buy or it. Amazon. Or I will call you evil names.
Well, yes,
if you don't like buy it. Non-purchaser. I can still call you a non-purchaser.
That is true.
I can call non-purchaser. You merely a renter in all caps. With
extra. Yeah, you know. I mean, in my eyes, the renter, as long as you watch the whole thing, I'm fine with it. But you don't want to get on Matt's bad side. So buy it. Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Because I am such, Heath and I have been in person a couple of times, and he knows what a mammoth. Hulking human being that I am. I instill so much fear into people around me.
Broadway Oyster Bar, baby.
Heath, you were talking about how there's so much TV. It seems like HBO has really started to fire up the Game of Thrones train. Now, I know that we heard about a lot of things in development right in 2019 on the heels of Game of Thrones. Now things are starting to solidify a little more. And I wanted to talk about a couple of them. And again, for book readers, a lot of this stuff is really neat for us, just because we've read these stories and it'll be really interesting to see how they've been adapted. The Duncan Egg novellas, I suppose you should say, they are now being converted into A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. And I think the first subtitle is going to be The Hedge Knight, which was the name of the first novella. So we got lots of news that this is now going into production. They start filming in June, or they start production in June of this year. And HBO has decided that what they're going to try to do to keep the Game of Thrones milking us, because it's hard to wait around 2 years for a new season. So they're planning on releasing the Duncan Egg television show in alternate years from House of the Dragon, so that there's no gap year in the content of that stuff. I don't know either of these two actors, and I don't expect you to either, because I think they're fairly new actors. But Peter Clarfe, or something like that. I don't say names very well. He's best known probably for the British comedy horror show called Wreck. He was in a season that. The guy is huge. Just like the character of Dunk is supposed to be like 7 foot tall. I don't think he's quite that tall. I think he's about 6 foot five. But he's just really well built, the few clips of him that I've seen. So he's going to be playing the kind of the main knight character. And then he has a squire that they call Egg. What does Egg sound like to you? The name Egg, is there a Game of Thrones character that Egg sounds like, Heath?
Aegon?
Yes, exactly. So his real name is Aegon, but everybody just calls him Egg. And he is the squire of this knight. And this kid was in The Ballad of the Songbirds and Snakes, which was the Hunger Games prequel.
Okay. At least they're not having Stephen Merchant play Duncan, because, you know, they could have easily went there.
Yeah, I suppose they could have. this guy, I don't know. I mean, either of these actors, I don't know anything about him. I know that the the kid is only like 10 or 11 years old. And I'm going to say this, and I'm going to get a lot of hate for it. It terrifies me when there are children actors put in huge roles like this. It absolutely terrifies me. And this is not a knock on Phantom Menace. I still think Phantom Menace is a really good film.
I knew you were going there.
But, you know, I think that there's a lot of potential that you could see for a mixed reception of this poor kid.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't know. I mean, you look at, there's so many shows that cast someone young and they knock it out of the park. Yep. I mean, you look at whether you like or not the Apple TV show Constellation, the young actress who plays the daughter was amazing. You look at, God, what's that HBO series with the lead actress who was in, she was in Logan with Hugh Jackman.
Oh, Daphne Keene?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, she was in, also in His Dark Materials. She played the
lead Dark actress. Materials, that's what I was
thinking. Yeah, that's it.
She's, like, she's phenomenal. Like, so they luck out. You know, you just, you got to hope that they strike while the iron is hot and they get the right. I mean, because it's tough with young actors, but there's some amazing ones out there that I'm just like, oh my God, they're just like, Daphne is like well beyond her years. And I just thought she was phenomenal. So hopefully, you know, this guy, this young kid is, you know,
one of those
has the chops.
Yeah. One of those. Well, we'll hope so. Did you know, by the way, that Daphne Keene's also going to be in Disney Plus's Star Wars series, The Acolyte?
Yes.
She's dressed as an alien. It's cool. I like the way her character looks.
She's, I loved, like, when in her dark, in His Darkest Materials, or Her Darkest, whatever it's called. Like when I saw the first season and then half of the second season, I was like, she's the star. So, I'm all in. Right. I'm looking forward to Acolyte, actually.
Me too. Nice to see something that's totally away from the Skywalker saga. I think that'll
be that should be good.
I don't know if there's really anything else to say about it. There's so far only one director had been revealed, and I don't know if that means that he's directing all six or eight episodes or however many they're doing. But it'll be interesting to see how that one turns out. Now, Henry Cavill, who you, of course, know from Man of Steel and The Witcher and all those other things, there was a rumor going around, and I have not found anybody to have confirmed it yet. So this is all reckless speculation.
Reckless speculation.
But he is rumored to be possibly playing Aegon the Conqueror, you know, the one whose crown is being worn by young Aegon in our series, and the one whose sword is being wielded by Viserys in the most of season one. They're going to do that story because now that they've planted the seed that he had this dream about the White Walkers, and that's why he united the whole kingdom or tried to by conquering it. It'll be interesting to see if that it's still just in development, but it's not necessarily getting to a place yet where we can say that. Although that name, Henry Cavill, has been thrown around and he's no longer with The Witcher. Obviously, they have a new actor playing for season four for that. So he might be available. I don't know how those kinds of things work. You know much better about how acting schedules work and all of that. But would you, just as a Game of Thrones fan, are we getting to a point where it's too much saturation, or are you okay with the more the merrier?
You know, it after we had the great Game of Thrones run, you know, a decade of that, and then House of Dragon has done well, and look forward to season two. I'm okay with more stuff coming out now, because as good as House of the Dragon is, it's probably never going to be Game of Thrones. I mean, that was, so I'm okay with, you know, bring it on. I mean, why not? I mean, they have the money. They have the source material. Let's do this. Let's get this thing rolling where at least once a year we have some sort of Game of Thrones series.
Right.
You know, because there's so much out there to be done, let's do it. You know, take a note from Star Wars, as they did way too much in a short period of time, as you called way before it was happening.
I was worried about Disney, you know, looking at the bottom line as opposed to the quality of that.
Sure. And we've got some great stuff, but we got some. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. It's a little too much. But we've had the two shows, so let's get one or two more. Let's get it out there. Come on. And is George going to finish the books? Who knows? But while we have these other properties, let's go for it.
It's been 13 years since he's finished a book, so I'm not too optimistic right now.
Yeah, no, George.
Come on, George. Just making you wait. So that one, so you would be down for an Aegon series. Now, there has been some sad news in the fact that the sequel for Game of Thrones, everything on the prequel side seems to be working really well. Because Duncan Egg is set in the time period right in between House of the Dragon and the main series. And then you would have Aegon the Conqueror going a little bit further back in time from House of the Dragon. So it's like everything's sprouting out now from House of the Dragon instead of Game of Thrones, because Kit Harington told, I think it was Screen Rant in an interview, that his show, Snow, had been shelved. That they had all looked at it and they couldn't find the right story for it. So, and not permanently shelved. I don't think anything really gets shelved.
It's probably for
put on reserve until they can come up with a better idea for it.
You know, as much as it's very sad, because I was very excited about it, at the same time, we don't want a show coming in, because it is after Game of Thrones, so there's a lot more at stake.
Yep.
So if it's not right, don't do it.
Yep.
But you know, you got Kit Harington who's willing to do it, and you got so many great minds out there. How can this not happen? I mean, I don't get it. But maybe the time isn't just right now for it.
Yeah.
You know, get a couple of these prequels out, get it flowing. Maybe someone will all of a sudden be like, I got a great idea, and, you know, we'll continue it.
Possibly,
you know,
so.
I think more would be at stake for a post Game of Thrones show versus a prequel. Because if you do a post Game of Thrones, it's done. Yeah. At least with the prequels, if it's not the greatest, no one's going to be like, well, Game of Thrones sucks or anything like that. But
I can only imagine, Heath, that there's going to be additional baggage with anything that comes post Game of Thrones.
Right, right.
Because there was so much division about whether season 8 was good or not, which.
Sure.
And I think that meritable arguments can be made for either side of that. But the whole idea of now, there's automatically going to be some people who didn't like the end of the show, that if that's the history of Westeros that they're referencing, are going to hate the sequel no matter how good it is.
True.
Because it's born out of what they hated about the last season of Game of Thrones.
Sure. Sure.
So I feel like that. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's much less of a gamble to keep playing in these prequel worlds, even if it's not all based completely on source material. Like the Nine Voyages of Corlys Velaryon isn't finished, but they're going to make it into an animated series. I think the Nymeria series might still be in development, but I'm not sure about that. But that would also be an animated series.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of other supplement things where you can see, well, does the audience like this kind of history? Do they like that kind of history? And you can measure it off of the interest in those other smaller properties before you build on a bigger property, like a House of the Dragon. I was really surprised that this Aegon the Conqueror thing even came into fruition so quickly. And I don't think it's something right. that's going to be done real soon, actually. I think, you know, House of the Dragon, I see lasting 4 seasons max. And you're going to need something to then pick up on the other side of that. So, yeah. You know, HBO seems to be, and Warner Brothers Discovery, they all seem to be thinking of, kind of along this 10-year projection of what they can do. You think 3 seasons of Knights of the Seven Kingdom, and 2 of those seasons are following in between seasons of House of the Dragon, and then right on the other side of House of the Dragon, now bring on Aegon the Conqueror, and you've got another show. And then if you want to extend to the quote, Winterfell theoretical book about Dunk in a 4th season, you could even do that and layer that over the top until you get Aegon the Conqueror on its feet, which at most could be 2 seasons, 3 seasons to my book. So I like the fact that they're thinking shorter seasons wise. The thing that I don't like, I don't know how you feel about this. House of the Dragon, 10 episodes last time, and they still had a bunch of time jumps only. And I understand the economics of it. Believe me, I do understand the economics of it. But only 8 episodes of House of the Dragon season 2 this year. Is that, again, like you said, it makes it fit in that window between Memorial Day and or Father's Day and the Olympics really well. Right. You know, and it even works itself around the 4th of July schedule. But how do you feel about this? And again, as an actor, you're obviously very much in touch with the economics of studios today. How have you felt about the reduction in the number? We used to watch with the first couple seasons of Lost, we were still getting 22, 23 episodes.
Oh, I know.
Which admittedly were too much, but nonetheless, it was still a lot of television for your buck at that time.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're getting shows now that are 8 to 12 seasons, especially on the cable outlets, and it's just the way it is now. 8 does seem a little seem short, and it's a little disappointing. At least if it was 10 to 12, okay. But you know, I guess, and unfortunately that's the way TV is now.
Yeah.
8 episodes though. Now, if some of these episodes are an hour and a half or whatever, okay. Yeah. But it is a little hard to grasp, because 8 episodes, when you think about it, though, budget wise, it's expensive, 8 episodes, but like it's only 8 episodes,
you know? Yeah.
So unless it's executed the right way where we're just getting, I mean, if it's an amazing 8 episodes, then fine.
Right.
You know what I mean? If it's 12 episodes and you get like 2 or 3 of the episodes just aren't very good, then, you know, you'll get the critics or the fandom saying, oh, why didn't you just shorten it? You know, so we'll see. I mean, unfortunately, that's where we're at. I guess just say, you know what? At least we get 8 episodes.
Right. Yeah. That was like when Dave and Dan announced that season 7 was going to be 7 episodes and season 8 was going to be 6. And I was kind of like, look, guys, I think they really only wanted to do a season 7 and call it wrap. So I looked at it.
Right.
Like, we're actually getting 3 additional episodes was the math that I did on it. And, you know, instead of 1 season 7 of 10 episodes, we get a total of 13 between season 7 and 8. We also had to wait longer. And
yeah, when you get a show of this magnitude, Matt, because it's the budget, I'm sure, is absolutely ridiculous. It's a little different.
Yeah.
So.
I love it. These guys are also talking about anything else on the news here. With the Snow series, I was like, slightly disappointed, also slightly relieved, simply for the fact that I feel like, you know, that was the biggest potential for fan backlash if it didn't go well.
Yeah, yeah. So that'd be huge.
Yeah. Because we saw a lot of that fan backlash die down with season one of House of the Dragon, which pleased me to a great deal. It just, because I was kind of sick of everybody just fighting.
Well, and I think
if we fight about everything now, Heath, we fight about everything. Yeah, so everything. Can we not fight about television, please, just once?
Well, and I think the success of House of the Dragon, and if season two is a continued success, it's going to lay the groundwork for these other series to happen and to, you know, so that's the thing. The fact that House of the Dragon was successful is a good step in the right direction.
Any other kind of House of the Dragon news that you wanted to talk about or anything else that's on your plate, just TV wise? Did you watch Three Body Problem? Did you watch
David's
newest project, or did you like it?
I did. Yes, I liked it. I thought, you know, there's some issues, of course, with the show, but I enjoyed it. You know, it comes down to the whole week to week versus binge.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been nice to have this show week to week because there was so much to talk about per week. I really enjoyed it, and I look forward to future seasons. Mm-hmm. I think they're great at adapting. You know, it's, you know, maybe creating their own material and finishing a series that a lot of people have their views on. You know, that was a tough position to be in. But no, I enjoyed Three Body Problem. And, you know, the only thing is because me and my wife watched it over, what, 2.5 nights, and now it's over.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, there's certain shows that I wish were week to week because I don't want them to be over. But at the same time, it's so nice to have them all. But, you know, it's where we're at with streaming.
Let me ask you a larger philosophical question. Is, outside of certain sporting events, is event television dead? Has it really come down to that now?
Yeah, it is. Like we talked about earlier, the HBO Sunday nights are kind of the last of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got Shogun now on FX on Tuesday nights, but everyone watches shows at their own speed now.
Yeah.
Event television of the 80s, the 90s, even the early 2000s. Yeah, it's dead. I mean, because people will either save shows on their DVR or we get to binge it on Netflix. Yeah, there's some week to week on Amazon and Apple TV and whatnot, but very rare. I mean, you look at, you know, the top notch, like say podcasts that cover shows, and a lot of them are, some are week to week, some aren't, but the ones that are all 8 episodes or 10 episodes are put out there like a Netflix, then everyone watches them at different times.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's tough to podcast, or you could just podcast about it, and then eventually people will come to your podcast as they, you know, decide to watch the show. Or, I mean, because you know, you can't, like House of the Dragon will be week to week, which is great, but like Three Body Problem, like as you said, or Tokyo Vice has been week to week, but Three Body Problem came out all at once.
Yeah.
So we're all on event TV. It's just not the same. We don't consume media the same as we did. Like Lost, when Lost was on, that was week to week.
Yeah.
That was event TV.
Yep.
And that was probably, and I guess Game of Thrones as well, was event TV because they released it week to week. Succession, very popular, week to week. But it's a mixed bag now. It kind of sucks, but at the same time, we trade off for getting it all. But because I used to, when I first started my Lost Revisited Now pod, was like, if you could get all the whole season of Lost, but you couldn't talk about it, would you watch it?
Yeah, that
was one of the big things. Like, you could watch it before anyone else, but you just couldn't say anything about it. Would you do it? Or would you wait for the week-to-week discussion? And, you know, that's where we're at now, you know? So,
it is. Yeah. Okay. Well, he is Heath Snolo. You can find him on the DVR Podcast Network, the Film List, and also the Star City Murders Pod, which is an in-depth look into the making of his film, which is out on April 16th at Apple TV, at Amazon, at anywhere you really want to look. Right, that's what I'm just going to say. Don't stop looking until you find it. Get it into your eyeballs, get it into your ears, get it into your veins, so that I don't have to come after you and call you mean names like non-Star City Murders purchaser. I will not tolerate you not getting this film, because Heath did a really good job putting this whole thing together during a pandemic. It was a monumental task, everything that he did under a hugely limited budget, and he still made a damn fine movie. Him and Giles made a damn fine movie, which I'm very proud to have been a participant in to a small degree, and a backer of to a small degree. So please be sure to check it out. Again, Apple TV, Amazon. I will leave links in the show notes. There's no excuse for you now. You must go. And remember, I'm waiting for you with all caps and exclamation points. Heath, so much. Thanks so much for being with me, bro.
Oh, thanks for having me. This was great to chat with you, and I appreciate the numerous plugs, but it's so great because we met during the Lost days, and we became friends, and we met each other at Broadway Oyster Bar in St. Louis when I was doing my baseball trip with my dad. And, you know, it's nice to, be on with you, and I appreciate the support for everything. And it's just, I love your pods, and you're awesome at it. So keep it going. And I look forward to this new season of House of the Dragon.
Yeah. Peace.
Find all back episodes and other information at mattsaudioblog.com.